Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, recorded here on Facebook Live and distributed through Breadbox Media. I am so excited today to bring you, I consider a good friend. I don't know if she considers it the same way back.
Totally, 100%.
Sweet. Nothing like putting you on the spot. I have Danielle Bean with me today. Danielle Bean has a new book coming out, You Are Enough. And I know that she has it with her. She can show it every once in a while on the screen. And if you're listening, I'm telling you, it's called You Are Enough. It's out from Ascension Press. Actually, I think, it's available for pre-order. Is it out, Danielle?
Available for regular order. They're shipping it out every day. So it's officially released. Yeah, very exciting.
Congratulations. I am so excited about this book. And I have to say, I've looked at a little bit of it. I can't wait to dive right in, but I'm waiting for my hard copy to dive right in.
So I'm going to be coming out real soon.
I'm going to be asking you really silly questions like, hi, Danielle, what's your book about?
Well, that's a good intro anyway, because a lot of the people that are listening and watching have no idea, maybe. And so I'm happy to just give you a little intro to the book.
Wonderful.
Which, so the subtitle is What Women of the Bible Teach You About Your Mission and Worth. And so inside of this book, I look at women in the Old Testament, which was kind of, I mean, even though I knew a lot of these stories, it was new territory for me, really focusing on women's perspectives in the Old Testament. So inside of the book, I look at dozens of different women in the Old Testament and some really significant characters that are very familiar, but then some minor characters that might otherwise go unnoticed, and what we can learn about God's unique love for women based on their stories, their eternal stories, and what we can learn about God's timeless love. I was really moved when I was reading these stories with kind of a fresh perspective, really focused on the women in these stories. And the truth that came out to me was that God's love is real. It's been real throughout the ages. He loves each of us uniquely, personally, individually, calls each of us to a unique mission. And that's been true throughout all of time. So that's really what was really encouraging and inspiring to me as I was going through these women's stories.
And the title, You Are Enough, like what are you hoping that women, when they see this, will, you know, what a feeling that you're trying to evoke with this
Well, I know you know this, Allison, because you work with women every day, that they desperately need to hear this message. I need to hear it. You need to hear it. And when we forget it, we need to remind each other of it, because you know what? I honestly believe that Satan is terrified of strong women who know who they are and are strong in their identity as daughters of God, because we are a powerful force for the good. And I think Satan knows that. And he gets into our heads. He gets into our relationships. He gets into our minds. He gets into our self-worth. He'll do anything he can to whittle that down. And there's so many ways in our culture that happens to us as women, that we feel less than, that we feel that we don't measure up, that we listen to those voices inside our head sometimes, such unkind voices. We speak to ourselves sometimes in ways we would never speak to someone that we love, someone, you know, a good girlfriend. And so this book, I'm hoping, will remind women of their worth, their dignity, and their calling, and their unique mission, their worth in the eyes of God. And really, nobody is a better person than another woman to come together and remind each other of that unique mission, that unique calling that we have as women in the eyes of God.
You know, and amen to that. And I'm talking today with Danielle Bean, her book, You Are Enough. And one of the things she said, Danielle, that I think just struck a real chord with me, and I'm sure others feel the same way. I would never, ever dream of speaking to another woman, even if I knew like I was right. I would never speak to her the way I speak to myself, even if I see them in the making the worst mistakes, or, you know, really messing up, right? And I would never belittle them. I would never make them feel worse than they're already feeling. Yet I have no problem doing that to myself at all.
Right. I know. It's the saddest truth, but it's so true. And I think it's so familiar to so many of us. And it's something we need to be constantly diligent and working on, because, you know, bad stuff slips in there. You get lazy in your habits of reminding yourself of your worth, reminding yourself of your identity in the eyes of God. And that's ultimately where we're meant to find our self-worth. But the world is full of distractions. The world is full of lies and false messages to women about their worth, especially even in an enlightened culture, you know, post-feminist culture that we're living in today, we're supposed to have all these opportunities. Well, what is the message that so many women are receiving from our culture? You know, open up a website or open a magazine or turn on television and you'll see these messages that you're not enough. You're not thin enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not skinny enough. You're not, all, you know, whatever it is, that you're only as worthy as you are sexy. You know, this awful message that I know that you have a daughter, and I'm always thinking of my own daughter's perspectives as a mom, mm-hmm. that the message that they need to hear and that we need to remind one another of is that we find our self-worth in the eyes of God, in his perspective, in his calling, his unique calling for each of us individually. And it's not found in those worldly things, but it's such a temptation. It's such a distraction every day.
Oh my gosh, is it ever? And I do, you know, my daughter is 12 and sometimes I forget. I'm going to start signing at you now, Danielle.
She's
deaf. So I forget sometimes that I need to verbalize more, you know, and through our language, which is sign language, these messages of how she is worth. And because part of the blessing is that she's not absorbing it through a lot of media, but probably a lot more than I think she is, just because of the images that media will use. And on television, you know, we see like these perfect bodies, which aren't even that. I mean, one of the things about advertising, I'm sure you've heard this, this made me crazy, that there was a, I think it was All Oil of Olay maybe commercial, and they had this woman come in to the studio and they did a time lapse of her just walking in with like acne and hair everywhere, just looking like a normal everyday woman. Exactly. I just prayed to God the other day to look younger. I got a new zit. I'm like, really, Lord? Not that young. Wasn't what I was going for.
That's vanity.
Be careful what you pray for, right?
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, to remember to remind my daughter that, you know, her worth is so much more than, you know, she, oh yeah. So just back to that commercial. Sorry. Then they went through the whole thing and she's, not only did they do all her makeup and then they took the image and they carved it in and edited
it. It's completely unreal. Yeah. I think, and you know, I've repeated that so many times to my own daughters that they roll their eyes now and they're like, I know it's not real, but I think we really just need to be reminded of that. I need the reminder. So I'm going to keep on reminding my girls. I'm going to remind you, Allison. I'm going to remind the readers of my book that, you know, this is not your calling. This is not where you're going to find your identity. This is not where you're going to discern your self-worth. It's only inside of your relationship with your creator.
Amen. Now I have a question for you. And it does look like my photo may have disappeared from the video, but I still have your beautiful face. Speaking of reminding you that you're beautiful.
I don't know.
So while I work to try to get me back in.
Okay. Yeah, I've got a little message that says the broadcast layout was changed by the host. And I don't
yes,
know.
Yes, I just made it all about you, girlfriend.
Okay, cool.
Totally made it all about you until I figure out why it decided to not include me anymore. Anyway, so my question for you is, when we look at these Old Testament women, mm-hmm. who was one of your favorite characters interact with or we encounter mm-hmm. and why?
Oh, yeah. So this is a tough one because so many stood out to me in so many ways. But you know what I have to say? What I was most surprised by and most edified by reflecting on was, believe it or not, Eve, you know, Adam's wife in the Garden of Eden. Because to me, I previously had only looked at that story. You know, it's the Garden of Eden, it's man and woman. She eats the apple and sin. You know, that's it. Moving on, you know, now to the consequences of sin. So she was a very one-dimensional character to me, this flawed woman, right? And yet when I really read it and researched a bit and saw what others had to share about that book of Genesis, it really, really opened my eyes to Eve as, you know, the first woman, that this was God's plan for women. You know, when he created Eve, he made her perfect and he put her in the Garden of Eden. And sometimes it's tempting, right, to be frustrated, like, well, she messed everything up. I mean, here she is, you know, talk about perfect body. She had it, okay? And she's in the perfect place and the perfect garden and has all the great food and her husband adores her and all of this. And she messed it up, right? But, you know, looking at that, like, why did Satan focus on her with his temptation? Why did he go to her first? Why did that happen? Why was she uniquely vulnerable in that garden? Why? And where the heck was Adam, you know, when he was supposed to be protecting her? All of this, you know, kind of came to mind as I was going through reading it. But then ultimately, once they do sin, and there's that terrible scene, you know, where God's pronouncing their consequences of sin, and there's sin and shame and sorrow and regret, and it's just this terrible thing. He's listing all the bad things that are going to happen as a result of sin. And yet, in that moment in the garden, you know, right after God pronounces all this bad stuff, what Adam says next is he calls his wife, Eve, because she would be mother of all the living. And I thought, what a hopeful, beautiful thing that you're in this sin and shame and, you know, just surrounded by mess and weakness. Well, guess what? That's the world we're living in today, right? That's us too. Mm-hmm. Here in this, Adam is looking to his wife and he's seeing in that great big mess, hope. Because he saw she would be a source of new life, a source of hope, a source of life-giving love. And that ultimately, that's what God's plan is for women. And I really do believe that Satan sees that in us too. He sees that hope in us. Every one of us, you know, go ahead and, you know, wear the badge. You're mother of all the living, you know, go ahead, call yourself that. And that's ultimately what our calling is. You know, whether or not we ever physically bear children, get married and have our own kids, that's not the way that every woman experiences that mother of all living, that bringing of life-giving love and hope to the world, which is a uniquely feminine calling. And so seeing that in that garden, that Adam saw that hope in Eve, and that our world looks to us as women for that same hope, for that same life-giving love that we're uniquely gifted to bring to the world. I find that so encouraging. And it's so, I mean, it's so empowering too. Like, what a privilege to play this role in our world.
Yeah, I never, ever would have come to that conclusion on my own. Like, I just see her. I just, when it says, like, now I have childbirth pain, yes, I was like,
focus there.
Girl, what are you doing? And then listen, I just I wanted to go slap Adam and said, dude, you could have said no.
I know. And you know, and I love that you mentioned that bringing forth children in great pain, because that's part of what, you know, God pronounced as this punishment for sin, this consequence of sin. And I think we women really truly experience that in so many ways. I used to think it was just like, oh, that means labor pain, right? Well, of course it includes that. But every woman knows that the different ways that we're called to motherhood, the different ways we're called to give of ourselves, like self-giving, life-giving, nurturing love, that it costs us uniquely as women. We get depleted by it personally, and yet we're driven to do it anyway. And I find that in those words, that God's really acknowledging that. He's acknowledging that uniquely feminine form of suffering and giving it dignity and telling us about its worth. So whatever way that you're bringing forth life in great pain, you know, we're all doing that at different stages in our lives in different ways. And, you know, it might be with toddlers right now, it might be with grandchildren, it might be with students you're teaching in your classroom, that kind of love that we're called to give, that we're built to give, that we're especially gifted at giving, that it costs us and it hurts. And I think that it's really encouraging to know that God sees us in that pain.
Oh my gosh. You know, I think the most profound thing I ever heard about motherhood was having children is like having your heart walk on the outside of your body. Mm. And quite honestly, like no matter how old my children get, I still worry about them. I have children who are, I have an adopted daughter. I have biological children. I am a spiritual mom to a few people. And I don't know if they realize, but they are truly like my daughters. And like my hearts are walking out on the opposite side of my heart. But I was just giving a talk last week and this woman came up to me. We were talking about motherhood. And she said she was visiting, bringing communion to this woman, 98 years old. Her phone rings and it's her daughter. It's the 98-year-old's daughter.
Oh my gosh.
And imagine, and she's having a problem and the mother is listening and helping her solve her problems. And she hangs up and she's like, still to this day. Now this woman had to have been on the other line, 68, 70.
Yeah. Right. You
know? And yeah, she still needed her mom, but a blessing that she still had her.
Yeah. Imagine.
And her mother said, the 98 old woman said, you never stop mothering your children.
Oh, and it's beautiful and it's so true. And even if they're not your own biological children, like you mentioned, people in your life that you're giving that kind of life-giving love to, that you're called to serve, and that it's a total outpouring of yourself, and we're built to do it and we love to do it. And yet I find it really encouraging to know that God sees that it costs us something. God sees our uniquely feminine way of suffering through our motherhood.
Amen. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, distributed through Breadbox Media. My guest today is Danielle Bean, and we are talking about her new book, You Are Enough, out from Ascension Press. And I love you too, Julie. There's a message that says, love Allison Gingras. I love you too. I'm so sweet. My fan club of one. I'll take it. I'll totally take it. So who else do we encounter in You Are Enough? What other women do we encounter in that book?
The one I hear the most feedback about is Judith. Okay, so of course, in the book of Judith, Protestants don't have Judith. Like, that's a Catholic thing, okay? And so some of my Protestant sisters, I remember talking with them about this, and I'm like, yeah, you got to read the book because it is something. And I love this. Okay, so if you're not familiar with the story of Judith, so it's kind of an apocryphal story where it's all like this building up inside of the book of Judith all the way up until the 8th chapter, where it's describing that the enemy armies are surrounding God's people, the Israelites, and that they're about to surrender. It's been going on and going on, and they've been losing, and this powerful army is so powerful and led by this powerful general, and they feel like it's hopeless, all is lost, right? And that the leaders of Judith's people are about to surrender. And when she hears of this, Judith, who is described as a widow and a beautiful woman and a virtuous woman, is aghast. Like, what are you talking about? We are God's people and we're not surrendering. And she goes to her leaders and she admonishes them, saying, have you no trust in the Lord that he's going to provide for us, that he's going to secure a victory for us? And through her, you know, eloquent speech to the leaders, she gains permission to herself have a few days before they surrender to charm her way into the enemy camps. And this is exactly what she does. I love this part because I'm like a hair and makeup girl. And so she totally gets done up. She does her hair. She puts on fine jewelry. She puts on her best clothing. She has her servants help her to do this. And she totally plays up her feminine gifts. And this is what I love about it, that it's not like she's going into the enemy camps to be, you know, to beat this army general and she's going to have to become like a man to do it. No, she's fully embracing her femininity and the strength of that and using it for the purposes of serving what God is calling her to do. So then using these charms, she charms her way into the enemy camp. She charms her way into a close relationship with this enemy general and gets permission to stay there for a couple of days. And this general is totally just taken in with her beauty, with her eloquent way of speaking, she's just the most charming creature he's ever met. And so he allows her to stay there. She gains his trust in this way, all the while maintaining her own virtue, right? She's not like going over there and sleeping with this guy or anything like that. And then she finally, on the last night that she's there, she is with this enemy general and she's gained his trust so much and he's so thrilled with her that he gets smashingly drunk. Okay. So the Old Testament is totally rated R.
Totally.
Yeah. And so inside of the story, he's just so excited to have this feast with her that he's drinking and drinking and drinking, and he gets crazy drunk. She, of course, is not drinking at all. She totally has her wits about her, and she knows what she's going to do. And he winds up passing out, and his servants, believing that the two of them are now going to sleep together, leave them alone in his tent together, and they take off. So there she is with this enemy general, alone in the tent with his sword. And I love that this opportunity presents itself to her, and she knows she's being called to win a victory for her people by killing this enemy general. And yet in that moment, she prays to God. And I just love thinking about that moment in the tent, because we may never be called to kill a general with his own sword in his tent. You know, we may never be called to charm our way into enemy camps or whatever, but inside of this moment, I think we can all relate to that, that sometimes we feel called to crazy things. Sometimes we know God's calling us to something, even something as mundane as your everyday motherhood, your everyday vocation, your marriage, your work, whatever it is. And we think, God, you've got the wrong person. Like, this is crazy. And yet in that moment, she places her trust in the Lord, prays to the Lord for strength, and then cuts off the guy's head, sticks it in a bag, takes off with her servant, going back to her people. And there's this great victory and this great, you know, rejoicing in the God's people. And I just find this, you know, because it's so crazy, right? It's such a crazy, wild story. Like, who's going to cut off some guy's head and carry it back in a bag? I mean, certainly not any woman I know. And yet there's this beautiful strength inside of her, Judith, embracing her femininity, embracing her natural feminine gifts and using them for God's purposes. And that's what every one of us is called to do.
The part of that, I love that story. My face got all wide-eyed when you mentioned it, because it was one that I had written down. I'm like, oh, I know. I said, I went through it quickly. I didn't see Judith. I'm like, she's got to be in there because she's just so fantastic. And I had forgotten all about her. And somebody just recently said, you have to reread the story of Judith. And I love that, you know, she gets to the point where it's just so normal for her to go in and out, you know, to go out to prayer. Like, she uses her faith in the beauty of her faith, the traditions of her faith, that she has to leave and go pray, and that they allow that and they get used to seeing that. So when she walks out with his head, nobody's thinking anything about having your bag. Like, every woman needs a bag. So even that, right? She just needed her accessories.
Oh my God. You got the Protestants are missing. They totally need the Book of Judith.
She wore makeup. She did her hair. She wore nice clothes. And she had a bag.
Sandals. I love it. I mean, she put on her best sandals. I mean, what's not to love about this?
And it had to be a pretty good size bag. I don't know about you, but my bag, I can pretty much fit like Cleveland in it. So,
yeah.
No, or a general's head.
And a general's head. It might happen. You never know. You got to be prepared.
Of course, it would be the last time you used it. So I wouldn't take my favorite. But as you're talking about Judith's story and being called to do something kind of crazy, I was just going to ask you, Daniel, what do you think, you know, so far that God has called you to that you think, Lord, you have got the wrong girl?
Well, it's something as stupid as marriage and motherhood, because, you know, even though I was firm in my belief from the time I was a little tiny girl, I wanted to get married. I wanted to be a mom. These were my big goals in life, that it's turned out in ways that I never imagined. And I've been called to things through that motherhood and called to moments of that required great strength on my part and great perseverance and great trust in the Lord that I sometimes fail at, and in ways that I never imagined. And it's so much harder and so much better than I ever imagined. So I think it's inside of those moments, and inside of also those moments, especially early on when my kids were all little and it was just, you know, we were talking about that depletion, that exhaustion, those crazy years, in whatever ways they present themselves to you, that even inside of those mundane moments that are just like so normal and so non-glamorous, that even inside of those moments, I was like, seriously? Like, this is it? Like, are you kidding? This is my great call to holiness? Like, this mess right here, are you kidding? And so that feels a little crazy, right? And sometimes there's a disconnect, and our egos sometimes get caught up in it. Like, it can't be just this, you know? But I'm always telling people, and I need to remind myself too, like, do you want to know God's will? Well, it's probably standing right in front of you. It's the people around you. It's the people he's put in your life for you to serve. And sometimes that's really not glamorous. Sometimes we want to escape it. We want to imagine we have some greater, more glamorous calling. Like a few years ago, I remember I woke up in the middle of the night and I was like telling my husband, do you think maybe like we're called to be missionaries in Calcutta? Like, I just, and I realized, you know, of course he talked me down from there, but inside of that moment, I really felt that way. And it really was like, I was going through a tough time. There was stuff going on I didn't want to deal with. And it was like, this can't be it. You know, you must be making a mistake here, Lord. This cannot possibly be what you're calling me to. And yet it is. And he's speaking to us through the people that he puts in our lives for us to love and serve.
You know, I often say, first of all, for anyone who doesn't know, Danielle Bean is the mom of 8 children, which I think is just remarkable. And they're all absolutely stunningly beautiful and good kids. So you've done whatever you may have thought he was crazy, but clearly the scriptures say you're never called to something that you can't, like God doesn't call you to the impossible.
Right.
He's called you to it. He'll bring you through it. But I often say I'm a mom of 3, and in the adoption of my daughter, Faith, who is profoundly deaf, and there's some days that are really tough. And I say the very thing that should sanctify me, this very thing that should be getting me to heaven, I feel a little bit like it's paving my way to hell.
Yeah.
Like, it was supposed to be my, you know, my ticket, because I'm doing such a good thing. But I love that you talk about that craziness of motherhood, that there are days where it is tough.
Yeah.
And it has its challenges, and that God knows that, and that he is right there with us. And if we're not doing something perfectly, I guess we can talk a little bit about that the time we have left, because I feel like when I look at You Are Enough, I think about my perfectionism and how I struggle to, sometimes I will procrastinate. I don't want to do something because I feel like I can't do it perfectly.
Yes.
I feel like I've completely failed because I didn't do it perfectly. Like, my kids aren't perfect. I mean, I'm saying that I'm saying how wonderful your kids are, you're probably in your head going, they're not perfect, Allison.
I know they're dirt and they know mine. So.
Love that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that that really is actually one of the themes in the book, is that idea of overcoming that temptation toward perfectionism that really gets in the way of us accomplishing good things. You know, we make that perfect the enemy of the good. We make the, you know, this lofty goal that we have because we care so much, because we truly do care so much about, especially inside of our motherhood, inside of our marriage and our parenting. Like, this is our vocation, right? We don't want to mess this up. And yet sometimes we set these goals that are so high that we can't meet them, or we build up other people in our own perspectives when we don't know their own struggles. And we think, oh, they're perfect. Everybody's got it all together except for me. And that's so discouraging sometimes. We can feel so lonely and so alone inside of that. And I really do address that in the book, that idea of wanting to belong, that really is built into every one of us. And we experience it maybe acutely in middle school, but we don't leave it behind there. Yeah. You know, we women especially, we want to fit in. We desperately want to fit in. We want to belong. We want to feel like we belong to somebody. And we want to also feel like we're not the only ones inside of our struggles. And yet sometimes that's Satan's greatest temptation to us, is he'll be whispering those lies in our ear that you're the only one. You're the only one who has this problem. You're the only one struggling in your marriage. You're the only one who doesn't understand how to put an outfit together, or whatever it is that you're feeling like, you know. And I think we all have these crazy like high school moments sometimes, even as grown women. You know, I experience it like at the baseball field when the other moms are in the bleachers and they're all talking about some event that I don't know about because I wasn't invited to it, and I'm feeling like an outsider. And it's the ironic thing is we all feel like outsiders.
Yeah,
we all do. We all have that kind of, you know, in our identity, that feeling like we don't belong. And yet truly we find that true meaning and purpose in our lives, and that true belonging, only inside of our relationship with God. And we can help one another to recognize that. We can help one another to realize our true identities as daughters of God and remind each other of it. But ultimately, that's the only place we're really going to find it. The only place you're ever going to really feel like you fit in.
When we were talking about that, I was thinking about my friend and one of the Bible babes. She says that we have this this desire kind of that we compare our blooper reels to everybody else's highlight reels.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Isn't that amazing?
I love that, because I really do think that's what we do. Like, we see and I think Lisa Hendy has put it like, you only see their avatar. Like, we know how many pictures do you take of yourself before you make it your profile picture?
Right.
I know. Take 50. You know, and then if I don't like any of them, I legitimately go find a Bitmoji and go, oh, look how cute I am in Bitmoji.
Perfect.
My hair's always perfect in Bitmoji form.
That's not true. We know our own dirt. We know our own messes. We know our own weaknesses and failures. We just know it all too well. And yet we're seeing what other people are choosing to share with us, which is, like you said, the highlight reel, the happy, shiny, and some of it's as it should be. Like, we shouldn't all be airing our dirty laundry, but recognizing that that's the truth of it. And that it's not fair to be trying to measure ourselves up to other people. And ultimately, we're getting distracted when we're doing that. We're looking for our self-worth where we have no business looking for it. Like, how am I doing? Oh, I feel pretty good because I'm doing better than her in this category today. Or, oh, I'm doing pretty bad because I ran into so-and-so at the supermarket and she looked amazing. You know, like, we have these kinds of issues, and we're not meant to be discerning our self-worth minute to minute based on who we last spoke to or who we last compared ourselves to. It's really meant to be not in those horizontal comparison kinds of relationships, but in a vertical relationship, one-on-one, who we are in the eyes of our creator.
You know, you were talking about not airing our dirty laundry. Yeah, there's definitely, like, there's a TMI, too much information, but I also think there's an authenticity. Like,
for sure.
You know, that balance between sharing everything, like too much sharing, and being authentic and being okay to say, I'm not perfect. I share, and Danielle has a podcast on Ascension Press called Girlfriends. Thank you so much for having me on recently. And we were talking about my book, the Stay Connected Journals for Catholic Women, The Gift of Invitation. And I spoke about my Bible babes, you know, and how I almost didn't have small group here at my house because I didn't want them to see that I'm a horrible housekeeper. just look behind me here in this video. You can see this is just a small, but this is pretty much indicative of the rest of the room. But, you know, getting to that point where I had to say to them, I want to be with you. I want to connect and do this, but you're going to have to get used to family clean versus company clean, and being the authentic me, you know, not not leaving the house disgusting. Like, no one's going to stick to the floor, be, you know, not be able to use my bathroom, family clean. But right. I can't make everything perfect with tea parties and white gloves. I'm just, it's not me. And I adore people who are like that. I think that's a beautiful gift of hospitality. I don't have it.
But you do have that gift of hospitality, because truly, true hospitality isn't about that white glove treatment, right? It's about making people feel welcome and inviting people into your space, right? And making them feel comfortable with you. And like you mentioned, that authenticity, really, it comes from a certain amount of vulnerability. And there's a certain amount of that that is totally appropriate and really valuable inside of our relationships with other women. Really, sometimes I experience inside of a social group that it takes, you know, a certain amount of time being together to get comfortable enough, and somebody will, you know, let on some vulnerability. And it's like, oh my gosh, me too. You know, the hashtag me too, I think really resonated with a lot of women, because we experience that. We experience that in our relationships with other women, like me too. And there's so much validation to be found inside of that, whether you're talking about being a victim of sexual assault, like the Me Too movement is all about, or if you're just talking about, like, I'm struggling to like my teenager right now, or I'm struggling, you know, to keep up with my housework, or I value these things, but yeah, I'm spending my time on these things. Like, you know, sharing those everyday battles that we all have in common. There's so much strength to be found in coming together to do that.
Oh, that's amazing. We are spending this time today with Danielle Bean, talking about her new book, You Are Enough, from Ascension Press. We're at the last few minutes of our time together. Danielle, what is, you know, that question that everybody asks, what is it you hope that women will get when they pick up and read You Are Enough?
I really hope that they'll be reminded of that eternal, timeless message of God's unique love for them. And, you know, we all think we know it, especially those of us who've been raised in faith or are living out our faith in various ways, like God loves me, blah, blah, blah. Like, I know it, right? But what I really hope that this book is going to do is really make that message, that truth, travel from your head where you know it, but all the way to your heart, where you can truly accept that truth and embrace that truth and embrace the life-giving love that it will help to grow inside of you as a result of knowing who you are in the eyes of God. So ultimately, I have this lofty goal for this book of helping women to see who they are in God's eyes, how God sees them, to a little bit open up their hearts, open up their minds, open up their souls, to be able to see themselves the way that God sees them, and see in that the greatness of the mission that they're called to, but also just to be still and to know that they're loved.
Amen. Thank you, Danielle, so much for spending time with me today on A Seeking Heart. It's always a pleasure to get to speak with you.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Allison.
We have been speaking with Danielle Bean and looking at her new book, You Are Enough. Oh, Danielle, where can we get it?
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah, so it is available on Amazon, but they're currently out of stock, which is good news. It means the book's been very popular. But if you really want your book to ship really quickly, order from ascensionpress.com. So if you go there, they're shipping it out every day. So they have plenty in stock at Ascension Press. But if you're ever, you know, floundering on social media, trying to figure out where to find it, it's linked all over my social media as well. And I'm Danielle Bean on all the different social medias.
And I'll have those links in the show notes as well as in the comments below for Facebook Live. Again, a big thanks to Danielle Bean for joining us today to talk about You Are Enough, out from Ascension Press. You have been listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, distributed through Breadbox Media. God bless.